Have you ever incorporated llamas into your occupational therapy sessions before? Our guest today, Mona Sams, has llamas as well as a host of other animals that she incorporates into her OT practice. I had an absolute blast chatting with her and hearing all about the wonderful stories with her animals and their amazing ability to connect with her clients. Get ready to find out exactly why llamas are so beneficial in therapy.
If you're interested in occupational therapy, this is the place for you. This show aims to explore our profession by sharing who we are and what we do. Because for us, occupational therapy is more than just a job. Hi, I'm Sarah. Welcome to OT for Life.
Welcome, Mona, to the show today.
Well, thank you.
I'm super excited to have you and really looking forward to this chat.
Well, I am doing the same.
And so I guess we'll just kind of jump in. And I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of where you are and what you're up to right now.
All right. Well, currently I'm executive director for a nonprofit called Creative Therapy Care that we created. And I have the good fortune to have music therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, counseling, and art expression under one roof. And so we have a little strip mall, which doesn't sound very good, but it's an old strip mall that we have renovated so that the clients can go from room to room, and it's marked by smartly colored doors. So that works very well for us. And of course, the main focus of my occupational therapy is that I incorporate animals into the treatment approach. And so for many years, I have worked with llamas because they're such an intelligent animal and they instinctively have a compassion for persons with special needs. And I can give you some examples of that. Unfortunately, they're anecdotal. I don't have research on why the llama of all the animals is so receptive to functioning in a therapeutic situation. So also what I'm trying to do, because none of us get any younger, is try to create it so another therapist could step in. So here we have our small animals housed in the back of our building. And so we have a pig and a duck and chickens that lay eggs, and our rabbits are all in the backyard. And the reason for that is that hopefully one day a young therapist would be able to step in and not have the pressure of all of the animals to take care of. So that's what I'm in the process of doing, because this is kind of all consuming at this point.
I understand that. I run my own practice and I totally understand how it can just kind of take over everything.
Yes. So that's where we're at right now. And we have clients that benefit from music therapy, counseling, and the occupational therapy. So they have three of their therapies here under one roof. And then the families aren't traveling all over. And in addition, the families get a block of time where they know that their children are properly engaged, and so they also get a little bit of time to themselves. We do not bill Medicaid or Medicare, because I know some practices are able to do it, but when we turned in IEPs and plans of treatment, the government said that working with animals was experimental and they don't pay for experimental. Now, we all know ways around that, but when your logo is Creative Therapy Care and you have a llama on the very front of it, it's a little hard to disguise that I do a majority or greater percentage of my work, the animals are incorporated. So that's where we're at now. I probably also need to tell you why llamas are so effective. One, you don't have the liability of the horse, because the llama is going to weigh 250 to maybe 450 pounds. And we also have alpacas and their range is around 200, 300 pounds. They also have a split toe, and so you don't have that big, heavy hoof that you have to worry about. And I am not valuing the benefits of working with horses. It's just I think you have to really know what you're doing if you're working with horses. So there's less liability. They're very intuitive to children with and adults with special needs. And they're also, which is not polite to talk about, but a factor, communal poopers. So they can go for 2 or so hours inside a building and not have a problem. And they will hum, many of them or most of them, when they need to go outside. So that's a very convenient factor if you're asking to bring them into a building. All right, maybe, is that enough about llamas? Have you got some questions about llamas?
Oh, I have a lot of questions for you about the llamas, but just kind of in general. So I know that you said that you work with children. Do you also work with adults as well?
Yes, this practice covers all ages. We have a little lad that's 2, and we have clients that are in their 60s. So we have a full range here.
That's amazing. Being for me, I work in early intervention, so I only work with kids up to like 3 years of age. Like seeing that range is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, we're very fortunate, and we have like the main OT treatment room where I am in now, and then we have a wonderful gym that used to be an old garage, and it has a gym floor in it from one of the institutions in this community, and it is all lined with dry erase materials so that the children can draw anywhere in that room. And so we're set up very well. And then the music room for music therapy is just off the gym. So sometimes music therapy will come and work in the gym. So it's very interchangeable here, and we all have therapists that are willing to work together.
Now, in terms of the use or the incorporation of the animals, is that mainly something that you as the OT are incorporating, or do the other practice areas, are they doing it as well?
Mainly people come to me because they haven't responded to more traditional approaches. And so like we have children that come from the schools who just haven't responded to traditional approaches, and with a variety of everything from autism to attachment disorder. And so we're able to respond to a wide variety of concerns. So that's why the practice is so wide. And the other disciplines, sometimes someone in counseling will bring their own dog into the therapy session. And then some of the people that are coming in counseling will stop and talk to the llamas, because there is always 2 llamas feathered outside. And then the llamas go home at night so they can be llamas and not having to engage in therapy all the time. They have to have a life besides working.
Right. Don't we all?
Yeah.
So there's... It sounds like there's always kind of a presence of the animals, regardless if they're being directly incorporated into the therapy or if they're just kind of there and present. And if needed, then they can be like, you can interact with them.
You're absolutely right. We have in the front area where the children come in, there's a Great Dane and a poodle and a boxer. And so many of the clients, when they come in the door, have their favorite dog, and they'll curl up beside that dog, and then we'll move on from there. Or some of the children are very partial to the goats, so we'll go out to the back and take a walk with the goats. So right now we're gearing up, because every year we have what we call Llama Fest, and the children and adults are taught throughout the year to lead their llama through 8 obstacles, And so they'll wind in and out of pylons and jump over a jump and go through a hula hoop, which is all wonderful gross motor planning and working across the midline because they have to hold the lead rope in a certain way. And then we put them into different categories according to their skill level and their judge. And so a lot of the therapy is geared towards that as we come up with the Llama Fest schedule, which will be October the 19th, which is this coming Saturday. And so there's not a lot of opportunity for children with autism to participate in group sports or compete. And so this way, it's their individual to go into the ring and lead their llama, but then they're with a group of children and learning to compete and accept where everybody arrives with the judging. So this is a really positive experience for them.
And I feel like it's not just where you have specific goals that you're trying to get them to reach during therapy. There's also this other goal for them to be able to participate in Llama Fest and guide the llamas through the activities and the exercises. Right. So for the children and for the people that are doing it, it also gives them kind of this other outside, like external motivation, rather than just kind of the goals that you've set up from like your therapist brain.
You're right. And also, even if they're nonverbal, they learn to communicate through the lead rope with a little tug or stopping after each obstacle, and they're expected to praise their llama. So even if we're not getting a word out of the child, they're still interacting and communicating with another being. And we have one little two-year-old that's been practicing with his mom. And this year, for the first time, he's going to leave his llama with his mom. And so he's in a small group of children. And so because we run the Llama Fest, we can stage the rules according to the way we want them. And it turns out to be very positive for the parents, because how often do they get to see their children compete in an event?
Especially at 2 years of age. I mean, that's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, the llamas are very, very gentle. And I'll tell you a couple of stories about llamas later when we're close to closing.
Okay. So I have a question.
Yes?
Do you ever have children or adults that come to you that are afraid of the animals at first, or maybe they're okay with one type, but then they see another one and they're like, whoa, and they are like really afraid and not really wanting to go near them?
Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. So we'll kind of have a feel before they come to the clinic as to what their interests are. And of course, anybody coming to this clinic knows what happens here. So, you know, when you drive around with a truck with a yellow trailer saying Creative Therapy Care on the back, people have a general idea that probably that's the person that's hauling llamas. So anyways, when I have a child that's frightened, we'll just start very slowly. Like there was a new client that arrived last week, and he was fine with like the pig and the rabbits, but then we got down to the three dogs. So we just opened the front door, and then it's fenced at the very front, and we introduce them through the fence. So there's all kinds of ways to introduce the animals where it's not threatening to the children. And we never put even a rabbit in a child's lap unless they'd given permission. And, you know, sometimes with children with autism, they don't like to use their hands. And so then they often will like to go nose to nose to a rabbit or lean up to the table and let the rabbit crawl up on their shoulder. And so there's just always to introduce it. And I don't think we've had anybody come here that there hasn't been a way to reach them.
I think that's really interesting, because I feel like so often we rely on talking and our expressive communication in order to connect with other people or to connect with the animals. And like you're saying, with the kiddos that maybe have delays in their language or don't have or haven't found that language yet, being able to connect in some of the, like, using the body language and using different parts of their body to be able to connect with the animals, it just makes it easier for them to start to relate and then start to trust the animal that's in their presence.
Well, and they learn quickly the facial communications, because if the llama's not happy, often the ears will flop backwards, or if the child's upsetting them in some way, then they'll make a gurgling sound. And so we can give them the feedback that, no, you can't pet that llama's head. He doesn't like his head petted, but you can pet his neck. And then they get to see the llama calm down and the ears come back up. And so there's so many intrinsic things that you can do. And it is, you know, some people think, well, I'll just buy my child a dog and that'll work. It isn't just the animal. It's the skill of the therapist working through the animal to the child or the young adult. So really more research needs to be done. Now, you know, I think it was 2006, we did do a research project in the schools. It's published in the American Journal of OT.
Okay.
All right, I better tell you about that.
Yes, because please.
It was really nice research. I was working in the schools, and I saw some of the children twice a week. And once a week, I did traditional learning skills, fine motor skills, gross motor planning, all the classic communication things that OTs do. And the second time a week, we brought the animals in. So it was the same children in two different types of sessions. So there was nobody left out of the research. It was very clean. And we did find that there was less repetitive behavior, more communication, staying on task longer, etc., when the animals were present. And that did get published in the American Journal of Occupational Therapy. I think it was May, June of 2006.
Okay.
So anybody that wants can look that research project up.
Yeah, and I'll definitely include a link to it in my show notes. So anybody that's listening that wants to read it and hear more about it, if they head to the show notes of this episode, they'll be able to get a link to it.
Okay, we got a friendly fly. Anyway, all right, where were we?
So I want to know how you actually got involved with using and incorporating animals in your practice, because it's not something that all therapists do. And for me, I feel like the main ones that I've heard of is using dogs and using horses. And those are kind of the big ones that I constantly hear about. But when I heard that you use llamas, I was like, hold up. Okay. Where did this come about?
All right. Well, actually, I looked up and did a little backwards research. And I guess it was in 1970. When I was working in Berrien County Intermediate School District in Michigan, I had a St. Bernard. And I briefly brought that St. Bernard to work and immediately realized that it was making a difference. But I didn't expand the program or anything. I just did it on an occasional basis. And then I am a Canadian on a permanent resident in the U.S., and I went back home to Canada, and I worked in a long-term care facility. And I had twice a week a group of clients, and maybe five or six, and they all had aphasia. And I was to provide an OT program them twice a week. So I'm like having tea parties and anti-cat days, and I'm getting a little low on more ideas to do with my little nonverbal group. And so I said to myself, I will bring a rabbit in a basket, and I won't ask for permission because I don't know that it's going to work. And so I came up the back stairs of the facility with my rabbit in a basket. And as soon as I opened that basket, all my little nonverbal ladies were ooh, ah, and wanting to share, and the rabbit moved around the table on everybody's lap tray, and we had a wonderful session. And I think the speech therapist was involved in the session. And that's when we said, okay, this does work. Now we're going to go and write a policy. and do it legitimately, because that was the first step. We did it illegitimately. And then luckily the Canadian physicians were, this is these people's home, and if it brings them pleasure, then we got approval for it. And so we wrote up a policy, practical things, all animals must have their rabies shots, animals will be on a leash at all time, we're responsible for any cleanup that occurs prior to contacting housekeeping. So practical things, nobody should do occupational therapy incorporating animals without a policy, because you're just going to get yourself in trouble. So anyways, that was the first time that I did it on a consistent, regular basis. And then each place I went to after that, if I was going to be hired as an occupational therapist, I would say, if you hire me, I would like the opportunity to be able to do a program. And by then, there was a little documentary made about the work, and I had my policy in place. So then the negotiation to do so was simpler. Does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. All right. So, and then I worked my way up in management in Canada and finally said, okay, I'm going to, my first love is working with children with autism. I'm going to go back to the United States, enough of this management business, and I'm going to find myself a job where I can incorporate my animals with children with special needs. So then I came back to the States, to Roanoke, Virginia, and worked in the school. So then it was really 2 and 3 days a week the animals were coming out.
So it sounds like you've always been passionate about animals, but it wasn't something like you always knew that you were going to be incorporating animals into therapy. It just kind of just happened, and then you realized the benefit, and it just kind of snowballed into this amazing program that you have set up today.
Well, and I went there was different organizations. I mean, we're going back quite a ways. There was an organization in the United States called the Delta Society, and they would have conferences for people incorporating animals. And there was the Human Animal Bond Association of Canada, which I believe now is dispersed. And there was a conference in Vancouver, British Columbia, when I was working in Alberta, and somebody came up from Washington with a llama. And I went, oh my, I'd already, you know, been doing programs with the animals. And I said, oh, if I was sitting in a wheelchair and a llama came to visit me, that would be really neat. And so it was about a year later, I bought my first llama, and then it's history. So llamas have been with me for a while.
That's amazing. I had never, before your program and what you have going on, like before that came on my radar, I had never heard of llamas being used in therapy before. And I've done some international volunteer work in Peru and in Ecuador. And of course, llamas and alpacas, there are plenty down there. But again, I never kind of connected the dots. And yeah, I'm so intrigued by this use of llamas, because it's just, I mean, they're amazing. I have this like affinity for them too. I love them, but I think it's so cool to be able to use them in therapy and also hear about all these benefits that, because of who they are, how beneficial they can be within the therapeutic environment.
Now, the other factor that we do is we incorporate the use of their fiber, and they make, and I should have had it right here, but I will dash in a minute. And so the clients know how to card wool, they know how to wet felt, they know how to dry felt, and then they make projects from the llama. And I have one situation where I was working with a group of people, and I said to them, well, where do you think this fiber came from that we're working with right now? And they piped up Walmart. I thought, oh my goodness, thank goodness we're working with fiber. And then, you know, we re-educated them that it was from the actual llamas that they were working with. So it's very important to get them to work with the texture. And of course, you can overcome some of the tactile defensiveness by wet felting, and then they have a product that they can take home and be proud of. And then we enter their projects in, there's a fair in Salem, just outside of Roanoke. And then we have at our Llama Fest, the children bring their fiber projects and we have a competition. And so then they get to see their projects and for everybody to enjoy. So that is another whole aspect of working with the animals.
Yeah. And I feel like when you were talking earlier, you were mentioning kind of doing some of the more like gross motor tasks with the llamas and handling and weaving them through obstacles. But then when they're working with the fiber, then you're looking more at like some of the fine motor complexities and the motor planning of them being able to do things with their hands, in addition to the tactile defensiveness and kind of overcoming that. So it's really this like all-encompassing treatment that you're able to do and work on so many different areas.
Great. Well, and we have a mechanical carter, and so you feed the fiber in and turn the wheel, and then it makes all the fibers going in one direction. Well, you can do it just as simply teaching them to turn the wheel, or you can sequence. They have to put the fiber in, turn the wheel, and it comes out the other side. So there's a sequencing pattern there. And so most of the things that you do with animals, you can grade them so nicely that it's easy to report the changes that occur. And back to the gross motor skills, what I love is when they're going in and out of the pylon, if that's a difficult task, getting the left and the right straightened out, sometimes the llamas will go perfectly through, and then the child is like a little lost as to where to go, and it always makes me, well, you have to have a little bit of a sense of humor.
So. Right. Where the llama's like, all right, guys, I know what I'm doing here. I'll help you this time.
Okay. Let me just grab, because we'll forget about it. Let me grab a couple of projects just right here that we could show you.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, I'm going to be right there. All right, so this is obviously, can you see that all right?
Yeah. Wow.
That's a young lad whose brother-in-law is in the Navy.
Uh-huh.
And so that'll go in his office. And then he has the satisfaction of having made something for his brother-in-law, and it's going to be in the fiber competition. And then this same lad made this one for his niece. And so, and she's a bit of a princess. So anyways, I got another one here. I've forgotten what it is. Oh, so we have a camel.
Uh-huh.
And then this is kind of fun. We just made the little felt. Well, if he was up against the wall, he'd stay there.
Right.
So we just decorated a wreath. And so those are the kinds of things. And then the stitching, obviously, the children can't do. But it gives us a time to sit together. I'll put the needle in. They'll pull it through. And then we have a little time to visit with. Yeah, we still have something to do. It's kind of like an old sewing bee. And we get a chance to just visit one-to-one. But it's not so intimidating because we've got a task.
Mm-hmm. Is it, like, in terms of structuring your sessions, is it where you do kind of the gross motor work first and then you come in and do some of more like the craft and utilizing the fiber? Or would those be two separate sessions that you're doing those in?
No, they sometimes would be together. What we try to do is kind of read the children as they come in the door or the young adults. And then we kind of base the session on, like, if it's a beautiful sunny day, well, let's get up and go for a walk with a llama around the building. Or if they arrive and they're really stressed, then maybe we just need to sit and curl up with the animals and have a rabbit on your lap. So the session, because we have such a broad spectrum of what we can do, the session generally gets based on how they arrive for the therapy.
Okay. And
many of our people are very long-term because we're not billing Medicaid and Medicare, and there are not enough programs for young adults that aren't capable of being in a work program.
Yeah, I was reading on your website, I was looking at one of the testimonials, and it seemed like one of the girls had been there for at least 15 years, maybe even more.
Yeah.
Which in this day and age, that's insane. Usually it's 6 visits, 12 visits, maybe a couple months, and that's about it.
Well, but then we rechange the goals all the time. You know, we're getting them through grade school and high school, and some, I have one client that still sees me, and his first words were to the animals. He was nonverbal, and he's not capable of working in the community, but he does look forward to coming and seeing the animals once a week, and then he participates in all the things that we do, the llama fest and so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of interesting. And as you said, we don't bill Medicaid or Medicare, so we don't have a time frame.
Yeah, which is amazing. Yeah. And unheard of.
It gives us an opportunity to really explore what we could accomplish because we're not limited. And some of the things that happen are not easily measurable because they're intrinsic things that are happening. So that's the basis of it. I'll tell you a story about Lana. There was a little lad that I had in the schools, and he was in foster care, and it became necessary for him to be taken and put in a 24-hour facility because he was a challenge to manage. But when he was in school, he used to come and see us once a week, and he loved to take his shoes off, and llamas will sit down. It's called cushing, and he loved to bury his feet in the woolly coat of the llama. Actually, we had several children at that school that the first thing they did was take their shoes off to bury their feet in the woolly coat of the llama. And he also liked to curl up on the llama, and the small children can ride the llama. A llama can carry a third of its weight, and so the llama weighs 300 pounds, and you have a child around 65, 70 pounds, they can get on the back of the llama. We have a little saddle. So anyways, he had lots of experience with the llamas. And then he was sent to an institution. And the story, the llama world is kind of small, so stories get back to me. And so he was scheduled to go on an outing to a llama farm. And so, but it was his nap time, and staff was a little worried if he could handle it. But one of the staff members knew that he had experience with llamas. So anyways, off to the farm they went. And when it came time to leave, they realized they didn't know where this little lad was. And so they're frantically looking around the barn and trying to find this child that they had misplaced. And they found him, and he was curled up with a mama llama with her baby Kriya, it's called, and he was fast asleep. And so not every animal would tolerate another being with their baby that they didn't know. So I think that tells us a lot of things. One, the work that we did in the schools prior to him having to go to the institution carried over and stayed with that child. And so that's encouraging to ourselves when we do work that's hard to evaluate how much effect you're having.
Mm-hmm. But you know, you can see it, and you can see it in the child or you can see it in the adult, but it's one of those things that's hard to get that measurable documentation on it. But you know in your heart, you know in your mind that it really, truly is making a difference in that person's life.
You got it.
Yeah.
Okay. And you're welcome if you're traveling and anybody wants to come and see our little facility, anybody's more than welcome. Because, you know, I've had quite a few birthdays, and so I'm not going to be able to do this forever. So I want to impart the knowledge, and I'm more than willing. We've just talked about the positive aspects of animal-assisted therapy. There's lots of things you have to think about. One, you have to have a very good vet. You have to have a vet that understands what you're doing. Because say a child has ringworm, and the child with ringworm is around the animals and can pass to the animals, and then the animals in turn can pass it back to the children. So you have to have a veterinarian that understands the kind of work you're doing and is going to be meticulous about ensuring the health of your animals. The other thing I mentioned before is you have to have a policy and a plan in place. And you have to have some sense of what animals are going to make a difference and which ones, like rabbits. I'm pretty careful when I'm buying a rabbit that I rub my hand over their face and make sure that they're not a quick rabbit that wants to bite right away, because it's not real good if the rabbit's a biter. And so there's all kinds of little precautions that you need to know up front so that we conduct safe programs incorporating animals. So there was a situation in Ontario, maybe 1970, where they brought some animals from the SPCA or wherever, and they brought a rabid dog with rabid puppies into a day program. And so you do need to know what you're doing. That kind of set animal assisted therapy back a little in Canada. That was many, many years ago. But you do need to know what precautions.
And I think a lot of times people think about the therapist and they think about the clients that they're working with, whether it's a child or an adult, making sure that the time is working for them and the length of session and, you know, yada, yada, all that good stuff. But when you're utilizing an animal, you also have to take into consideration their mindset, their energy, their hunger, kind of their status, and making sure that you're not just putting them in a session back to back to back, that they're getting breaks, and really kind of the wellness of the animal. And yeah. I think for a lot of people that haven't worked with animals and utilizing, incorporating them in therapy before, that's kind of an aspect that you don't really think about. And it's a really important one, because I've heard of stories where horses have kind of lashed out, that they've been burned out or they've been used too much. And it's really, really important to keep the animal's well-being as well as yourself as a therapist and the clients, and really paying attention to all three of those dynamics that's happening at the same time.
You got it.
So I love the story that you just shared. And I was going to ask, what would be your most memorable moment as an occupational therapist?
Okay, I think it's what you're talking about, is knowing the different animals and their capacity and the interconnectedness of all beings. And I had a Great Dane when I was working in the long-term care facility, and it would put her paws up on the lap tray of the persons in wheelchairs, and then the Dane would be face to face with the clients, and so the wheelchair literally disappeared. And so they were particularly fond when I would give the command for the Great Dane to do that. Well, a person with quadriplegia came to the group, and of course his hands didn't move and his hands were very edematous and they were just placed on the lap tray, and he requested for me to give the command for the dog to come up. And I'm going, oh, if the dog bumps its hands and splits those fingers, I'm going to be in a lot of trouble, but he wants to do it. And so I looked at the dog and I said, you can put your paws up, but you cannot bump those hands. And I gave her the command to come up. And that dog pulled her paws back into her body and rested elbow to elbow with the gentleman. And so everybody was, oh, she talks to her dog and it understands. And I'm going, I don't know quite how I did that one. But, you know, that is where, if you have the right animals, and as you said, they're not fatigued, they will come through for you. And I think that was a real learning point for me, to realize that we are all interconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I could tell you a fun story on a little lighter note. I had a duck named Louie, and I lived, this was when I was in Canada, and he had got a bum leg. And so every day I would take him up to the kitchen and put Epsom salts in the water and have him exercise his leg. And he was using his wing as a crutch. And then every night I would put him back in his special place in the barn so that nothing would happen to him. And after several weeks of doing this and him managing the, he no longer used the wing as a crutch, I thought, oh, okay, you can go free. And he managed for a couple of weeks and no problems. Every night he came back to the barn, and then all of a sudden he didn't show up. I'm beating myself up. Oh, I shouldn't have let him go so soon. He wasn't ready to be on his own and all that dialogue. And then about 2 or 3 weeks later, back came Louie, and he had a duck female with him, and she had a bum leg. And so Louie must have had quite a conversation with his new friend about what could happen up at that house that maybe the leg could get fixed. So I like to end on a lighter note. And so I do believe in the interconnectedness of all beings.
Right. That's amazing. I'm speechless. Like, that's a fantastic story and really, really just heartwarming. Oh, I love it. I love that it was a duck too.
There you go. And we have a duck in the back. He's a crested Peking. And he's very sassy. He kind of runs the backyard.
I love it. Is there anything else that you want people to know about incorporating animals in therapy?
Well, I think that I'm hoping that some folks, I mean, it's becoming broader and broader. We're accepting service dogs. We realize service dogs can help with post-traumatic stress. I think those aspects of the service animal are going to broaden the scope. I do think that therapists need to be creative and find ways to incorporate the animals into the treatment approach. And I know some people are doing it by doing everything but mention that there's an animal at the end of the tethering rope. I think the horseback riding program is because of the fact that you can document the changes in physical development probably will be most helpful in understanding. But you have to be really careful and secure in your work environment that they're really supporting when you start to bring animals in. And I think the outpatient setting is probably safer for all of us. But yet I do know of programs that are being done in institutions. So each individual situation needs to be thought through for the variables. And as I said, I am just so blessed here because we got a very large grant. We bought the building. We're a nonprofit. And so I have the professional freedom. I mean, I still have to take precautions and be careful what I'm doing, but I have a unique professional freedom. But I am more than willing, if anybody's got questions, email me. And if anybody wants to come and visit as to how it's done here, they're more than welcome. And so I'm more than willing to share the knowledge that I've gained over the many years.
Awesome. And we'll definitely make sure to link to your email and link to your website in the show notes. Okay. So anybody that is interested in checking that out, all your contact information will be there. And I want to ask you one more question.
Yes.
If you could only have one word to describe occupational therapy, what would it be?
Ooh, one word. Maybe I would say compassion. I guess that would be what I would want as a component of occupational therapy.
I love it. I always ask this because I feel like we as OTs, we have so much to say about our profession and the good that we can do. And it's difficult to just put it into one word. And so, like, everybody's always like, oh, one word. Wait, how do I do that? So I think compassion is a fantastic word to describe our profession. And I really thank you so much for taking the time to come on and chat with me today and share about your journey and share about your passions and also like shedding light on some of the different animals that can be incorporated into therapy and some of the unique benefits that these animals can also bring to the table.
There you go. All right. Well, as I said, contact me any way you want and I'll be glad to share the information, or anyone can come visit if they want to visit.
Perfect.
Well, it was a pleasure to talk to you and I hope we shared some pertinent information.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to say thanks for listening to today's episode. If you want to further the discussion, go to our website, otforlife.com, and join our Facebook group. If you like us, here are three easy ways to let us know. One, share our podcast with a friend, colleague, or anyone interested in occupational therapy. Two, leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere this podcast is found. Three, subscribe to us so you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. Thanks again. We'll catch you next time, OT for Lifers.
Oreo, are you going to get in the picture? Yeah. We have the great
yeah.
Yeah, Oreo. Okay, I know. I don't normally work on Sunday.
I feel like it just kind of ties into kind of the non... I'm blanking on the word that I'm looking for here. This happens. I do this all the time and I'll edit this out.
Glad when I blank. Okay.
Oh, yeah. No, don't even worry.
So now I lost my train here just a little bit. Guide me if that's enough information or do you have any questions?
So, now what was I going to say? The llamas. Oh,
all right. Now what are we going to talk about?